Today's episode is sponsored by Musicians Maintenance. What's Musicians Maintenance? Well, do you ever experience aches and pains after long practice sessions or intense rehearsals? It can be tempting to just push through or hope that the discomfort eventually goes away on its own. But that's not really the answer, of course. Cody Weisbach is a doctor of physical therapy who specializes in musicians' health. He's curated a free two-week program called Musicians Maintenance that is designed to not only relieve these nagging aches and pains, but also set yourself up to prevent more serious injuries in the future. Through a series of short daily emails with clear how-to videos, you'll gain helpful insights into the critical muscles that we often neglect the most and learn simple yet effective exercises tailored specifically to a musician's needs. You'll not only learn what to do and how to do it, but why exactly it will help you as well. Here's what one pianist who went through the program had to say. Just wanted to say a quick thanks. I'm training for a Chopin concert, and I started to feel like I'm really straining my shoulders and neck. A quick search into your past newsletters pretty much gave me all I needed to start releasing the tension I built up. I really appreciate all the work you put into these. If you think about how much sitting we do and how much time we spend squinting at screens and devices and the music on the stand in front of us, it can be easy to develop poor postural habits and weak, tight muscles without realizing it. Cody's program takes just 5 minutes a day and is designed to counteract all of this poor posture time, enabling you to feel more physically balanced and ultimately be a healthier and happier practicer. It's also a great way to warm up your body in the morning before practicing, instead of just diving in cold. The Musicians Maintenance program is completely free, and you can get started today at musiciansmaintenance.com/bulletproof. That's musiciansmaintenance.com/bulletproof. This is Noah Kageyama, and you're listening to the Bulletproof Musician Podcast. Every Sunday morning, we'll take a look at a new research-based tip or technique to help you practice more effectively or perform better under pressure. And on the first Sunday of every month, I'll have a guest from the music, sport, or research world who will share their insights on how we can all be a little more awesome in the practice room and on stage. I was never all that good at tennis, but always did enjoy it. So one summer, I decided that I'd try to introduce the sport to my kids. We went to the store, picked up some kid-sized rackets, and headed out to do some hitting. Naturally, I started by walking them through the basic grip, stance, and swing, and managed to overwhelm them with instructions and paralyze them with too many things to think about. Basically, I sucked all the joy out of what is essentially whacking balls with a handheld trampoline, which, if nothing else, should be fun. Instructions centered around technique and learning how to move your body the correct way often play a central role in the experience of learning a new motor skill. But is this actually the most effective way to learn a new skill? Or is there a better way to approach and even accelerate the learning process? In a 2024 study, 36 relatively inexperienced golfers, that is, undergraduate students who completed a one-semester golf class, were asked to hit a pitch shot toward a target 10 meters away. Everyone started out by watching a professional golfer demonstrate how to hit the shot. And then they were given basic instructions, like how to hold the club and the right way to stand and swing. Up first was a quick test of 20 practice shots to establish a baseline of their pitch shot ability. And then participants were assigned to one of two groups, an internal focus group and an external focus group. Each group performed three sets of 20 practice shots. And in each set, they were given a different focus instruction, which encouraged them to focus on the swing distance, the swing weight, or the outcome of the swing. For instance, in the swing distance set, the internal focus group was asked to focus on the 1-to-1 swing ratio of your arms. The external focus group, on the other hand, was asked to focus on the 1-to-1 swing ratio of the club shaft. In the swing weight set, the internal focus group was asked to focus on the grip pressure of your hands. The external focus group, on the other hand, was asked to focus on the weight of the club head. And in the outcome set, the internal focus group was asked to focus on your force control, whereas the external focus group was asked to focus on the landing point of the ball. And would these different instructions make any difference in the accuracy of their shot making? Well, to find out, all of the participants were asked to return to the lab a day later to see how much of their practice would actually stick. First, they were given a test of 20 shots at the same 10-meter distance that they practiced at. Both the internal and external focus groups improved and were able to hit the ball closer to the bullseye than they could on the initial test the day before. However, The external focus group improved by more and consistently hit the ball closer to the bullseye than the internal practice group did. And then, to see how much of their practice would generalize to other distances, they were given 20 shot attempts at a new distance of 13 meters. Here too, the external focus group had better accuracy scores and consistently hit the ball closer to the bullseye than the internal group did. So that's pretty cool, but there are a couple other details that are also pretty important. Shot-making accuracy is only one aspect of the learning process, so the researchers were also curious to see what sort of effect internal or external focus cues might have on the participants' self-efficacy and positive and negative affect during practice and testing, self-efficacy being how confident the participants were in their ability to hit the target, and affect being their emotional state or mood. And did the different types of attentional focus have any impact on their confidence or mood? Actually, yes. With regards to self-efficacy, everyone started out at about the same level of confidence, but when asked again before the test, the external focus group expressed more confidence in their ability to hit the target than the internal group did. And they tended to be more confident in their ability to hit the 13-meter target too, although this difference didn't quite meet statistical significance, just FYI. Practicing with an external focus of attention also seemed to contribute to a more positive learning experience. At the end of practice, participants were asked to rate to what degree they felt A, joyful, B, confident, C, concentrating, D, distressed, E, ashamed, and F, irritable, on a scale of 1 to 5, where 1 equals very slightly or not at all, and 5 equals extremely. And interestingly enough, those who practiced with an external focus had higher positive affect ratings and lower negative affect ratings. In other words, the external focus practicers ended their practice session in a more positive emotional state and headspace. So what are we to make of all of this? Well, the authors explain that an external focus seems to help with reducing self-consciousness and the tendency to micromanage the technical mechanics of a motor movement, which helps us produce more fluid, more coordinated, and efficient movements that utilize more degrees of freedom. And I think the mental and emotional benefits of this approach to learning are pretty important too. Because coming out of a practice session, seeing yourself improve faster, where you feel more effective and capable, can be really empowering and motivating, and perhaps make you feel more inclined to practice again, rather than avoiding practicing by digitizing your entire collection of scores or cleaning the crumb tray in your toaster oven. Being able to facilitate a more positive mood and less negative affect during practice and performance practice is also really valuable, not just because this might help you be more open to practicing again the next day, but because, as the authors note in their discussion, previous studies have found positive mood to be associated with improved memory consolidation and enhanced learning on a neuronal level as well. What might this look like in practice? Well, here are a couple examples from the literature of what an external focus might look like in other sports. In volleyball, for instance, an internal instruction might be shift your weight from the back leg to the front leg while hitting the ball, whereas an external instruction might be shift your weight toward the target. In soccer, an internal instruction might be position your foot below the ball's midline to lift the ball, whereas an external instruction might be strike the ball below its midline to lift it. Or in music, instead of focusing on the movements of the shoulder, the arm, or hand that's necessary to make a note speak, which would be internal, focusing on the quality of the sound or articulation or how you would like the sound to project to the back of the hall might be a more effective external instruction. The difference in language might seem a little subtle at first, but it seems very much worth experimenting with when you think of not only the potential performance benefits, but how this could help to enhance a student's mental and emotional experience of learning and performing their instrument as well. Learning how exactly to use an external focus in the practice room and on stage is one of the skills we'll actually work on in the live online Performance Psychology Essentials class that's starting this week. If you've started to find that simply practicing more isn't providing the same benefits that it used to, but not sure what the next step might be, I think you'll enjoy this cohort-based 4-week class. You'll learn research-based strategies for getting more out of your practice time and how to shrink the gap between practice and performance so you can play more freely and confidently on stage. You'll work on these skills alongside a group of supportive and curious fellow learners, ranging from adult learners of all ages to currently enrolled conservatory students, professional musicians, and educators who work with students at all levels. Registration for Cohort 17 ends at 11:59 p.m. Pacific Time today, Sunday, March 24th. Our first live session is on Saturday, March 30th, and subsequent sessions are on Sunday, April 7, 14, and 21. You can get all the details
and sign up at bulletproofmusician.com/essentials/blog. And if you found the episode helpful, please share it with a friend or practice buddy who you think might also enjoy experimenting with this during the coming week.